This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everyone. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on a special Martin Luther King Jr. edition of the show. Jim Moore in Vegas, hanging out, videotaping his kids, taking golf swings at some indoor facility. We got Michael Bumpus in today. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Today we just took the 1-0 out of Moore. And it's
Bob,
Dave,
and Moore.
And the Moore is Michael Bumpus.
It is much more.
It's definitely an upgrade.
Yeah, so good to have you here, man.
He's taking shots at Jim right and left.
Well, we got to keep his tradition alive where you take shots at those that aren't here. So the opening drive, by the way, is brought to you by Cherish. Coming up on the program today, we got the professor, John Clayton, who joins us at 4 o'clock, as he does every single day. We'll talk some NFL with him, and then we'll talk more NFL with Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. Wrote a good piece on K.J. Wright in the season he had and sort of how he bet on himself. Interesting piece. So I would check that out if you haven't had a chance to read it yet at ESPN.com. So Brady will join us at 5 o'clock. Meanwhile, man, I was disappointed with those games this weekend. They were just duds. They were not compelling. The outcomes I didn't truly care about. I was rooting for the Packers. I didn't think they were going to win. I thought they'd put up a better fight than they did. Chiefs, Titans, I honestly didn't really care. I was kind of rooting for the Titans because Tyreek Hill is on the Chiefs, but not a huge rooting interest either way. But just both games were just kind of like, I was so excited. I was so pumped for Sunday. It's rare that I root for the end of the weekend to come faster, you know, and it did. And I laid on the couch all day watching it, just going, this stinks.
Well, I guess I wanted the Niners to do well. And the reason why is because the Seahawks matched up well against them. I mean, they literally came inches from beating them twice. So, you know, and it's interesting. I guess I haven't noticed it that much. And I don't know if there's been a year like this. But pointed this out, before we went into the Green Bay game, they struggled with 3-12-1 Detroit. Yeah. The 49ers kind of struggled with Arizona, too. I mean, that they beat them twice, but and then they struggled with the Seahawks. The matchup was just a good one for the Seahawks, so it was disappointing to me. But I think I would have been more disappointed if Green Bay went in there and whooped them, just because I feel like it makes our division look better. But the problem is these guys are pretty young. I was going through and looking at, like, their D-line. I mean, they've got one older guy in Dee Ford, but for the most part, those guys are, you know, rookie – third-year, fourth-year type of guys. Same thing on their defense, other than Sherman. You know, there's a couple of guys there, but they're pretty young. So the window is open for a pretty good amount of time for the 49ers, and they are well-coached.
They're well-coached. I like their scheme. They're young on defense, and they're young on offense. This kid, Deebo Samuel, I was telling my buddy, I was texting him. I go, he's going to be a Pro Bowler one day. It's like there's something different when the ball gets in his hands and he starts running. He converts from a receiver to a running back. Like, he runs hard, he runs mean, and then we can't forget the bag monster back there, 29 carries, 222 yards. This guy had, I looked it up, he had 740-something yards in 4 years at Purdue. One NFC title game, he has 220 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, that just goes to tell you, that's why people don't like spending a lot of money on running backs, because Mostert is a free agent. It's almost like you can find a baller as a free agent. So it's just nice to see guys like him excel and play well, especially when he's been cut 7 times. I was cut 3 times and I was depressed. I'm like, what am I doing? Am I not good anymore? But the fact that he was cut 7 times, stayed with it, came out, had a good game, that was a good story for me to watch.
You know why San Francisco won? Because they have modernized football down there.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
I wonder if they ran single high safety.
Yeah, single. Now it's single low. We're going to try to institute that phrase if we can. We'll definitely get to what they did that was so new and innovative and effective. But it was, man, what does that say about the Seahawks running attack? That they could do absolutely zip zero and nada against that Packers front. Yet this guy goes bananas. Mm. I mean, Garoppolo barely had to be on the field. They could have put anybody out there at quarterback and would have had the same result, essentially. He was a non-factor. Hey, Jimmy, go out there, hand the ball off, and when you do throw it, don't screw it up. That was it.
Yeah. To me, it just says, I mean, you got to take into account, one, that Seahawks line has been banged up all year. I mean, You can't.
Well, hey, but before you go further, Dave is of the opinion that when, you know, you're looking at success or lack thereof of a running back or running attack, that what is it, 75% you put on the back?
Yeah, I mean,
versus the line.
I think it's, but I mean, there's your arguments built in for that too. I mean, look, I know you had Marshawn Lynch, who was really good a year and a half ago. Well, 3.5 years ago, probably. Yeah. And then a rookie. So, I mean, I thought any criticism of the run game against that defense, I felt like that's kind of what Russell was going to have to take over that game in order. And he pretty much did. But, yeah, I just don't think you can compare it or say that that was the Seahawks run game that went in there. It was totally different. And then, you know, the O-line, as you were saying, Michael, by the end, they were banged up too. You had a backup center who had a finger that kept dislocating during the game. You had Dwayne Brown playing, you know, after a surgery. Most people are still on crutches. He's out there. And then it ended up being, what, Haynes at left guard?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't. And when you look at, like, San Francisco, man, they execute so well. And it's going to be up tomorrow, I think. I did a football 101, 710sports.com.
Where?
710sports.com.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, okay. So it's going to be up, I think, tomorrow or the next day. But they ran a trap play, which is just a basic play, on 3rd and 8 and got a touchdown, a 36-yard touchdown. And it's all because they executed. So that's modern. Modern football. When you're able to execute the most simple running play, and it was almost like when I'm watching it, do you remember that old, there was a Vince Lombardi film where he's out on the field, I think, and he has a chalkboard out. Yeah, and he's like, we're going to get a seal here, we're going to get a seal here, we're going to get a kick out here. I mean, that's exactly what it was. So, yeah, it was just, I guess to me, I liked seeing that work just because it's, and you know what came to mind when I watched that? The 58-yard touchdown that Rashad Penny had in Philadelphia. It's the same thing. It just went the other way. It was a trap play, but it was all about timing and just bodying guys up, and that's what San Francisco has done all year. And ever since week 10, I've thought this is the team that's going to win the Super Bowl, and I think they are, and I'm surprised that they're actually they're slight underdogs in this game.
Probably because the Chiefs look so explosive. Yeah. Offensively, right? They just—I mean, more
modern. Do they look more modern?
They're super modern, Dave. Super necessary the way they run their offense. But we'll get into the modernization of the run game that apparently the 49ers have unveiled for all of us to ooh and awe at. But when you look at just your thoughts on the success that they had with a guy, and I don't know if Mostert's going to be a guy who is this guy moving forward. He's had one this year. He had one game over 100 yards. Mm-hmm. It's not who he is. This is not typical of who he is. So, you know, you look at it, I think he had just over 700 yards rushing this year. Okay. You know, a huge day. I'm not trying to devalue it. I'm just trying to figure out, okay, if he can do that, what were the 49ers, in your opinion, was it more about their line? Was it their creativity? Was it just the fact that the Seahawks suffered the injuries Dave was talking about with the center, with the finger, and you got backups here, and you got backups at the running back spot? Is it as simple as that?
Well, you got to give Mostert his – am I saying it right, Mostert?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to give him his credit. He looked better than Marshawn Lynch. He looked better than Travis Homer. So you got to show him some love. But when I look at this 49er offensive line, they play really fast. And how do you get your offensive line to play fast? They're coached up. They know exactly what they're going to do against this front. The center's communicating to his guards, his tackles. Everyone's on the same page. And when you get those guys moving on the same page, they're in attack mode. There's no second guessing. They're not taking false steps. They're getting to the second level. They're getting their combo blocks. And then you get a guy behind there who's seizing the moment. He's got an opportunity. Coleman goes down, and he steps in and seizes the moment. And he looked fresh. He looked like he didn't take a lot of hits this season. His knees were high. He was floating across the turf. And then it's the deception. The 49ers do a great job of deception. You're going to make it look like it's going right, but we're really, really going left. And then once you're on the defensive line and you're just getting pushed back, play after play after play, it starts to wear you down. How do you wear a team down? You beat them up in the run game. You want to keep a D-line fresh. You throw the ball 50 times. The ball's out before they even get to the quarterback. You want to wear a team down? Man, you double-team that guard. You get to that Mike linebacker. You put him on his butt. So when you think of a California team, you don't think of toughness, right? You think of tough football. I think of Green Bay, Chicago, you know, Pittsburgh. You don't think of the 49ers as a tough organization just because of their history and where they are. They were the tougher football team yesterday.
They ran it 42 total times. That includes quarterback scrambles, the whole thing. 42 rushing attempts to 8 passes.
Yeah.
8. Well, he completed 6.
Yeah.
6 of 8 for 77 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, but came away with a 104.7 quarterback rating. Still don't know how that works. But
yeah, and it was only like 16 points less than what Mahomes had. He had a 120, yeah. I think, and he ended up. But, yeah, the play I referenced that went for a touchdown, I mean, that he had thrown 3 passes up to that point. So he was almost, you know, 6, 7, 8 minutes into the first quarter. He had already thrown almost half of his passes. So, yeah, and then, you know, he got lots of that Deebo Samuel kid. Is that you, Michael, talking about that kid?
Yeah.
I mean,
he only had 3 targets. It felt like he was targeted. He was such a big part of it. But you look at it, he had 2 catches.
Yeah.
For the whole day, but they were a total of 46 yards, one of them going for 30.
Yeah. Well, and then one of them, you know, he caught 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. The other one was, I think, 16 yards. So the ball, you know, nets out traveling 14 yards through the air. And then he gets after catch, the yak yards were 32. So, yeah, and he was running people over, and they just have those guys playing so well and so hard. And then when you say fast, Michael, I mean, that's when you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that has to do with coaching. When you are not quite sure who to block, and it happens fast up front, if you're not decisive, I mean, if you're not decisive in the defensive backfield, there's some time and there's some space there. But, man, up down in the trenches, man, you got to know exactly where you're going, and you just watch those guys. And on that trap play in particular, one of the guys fell down, and the guy decided to, instead of kicking him out, he just kind of put a hand on him and then went on and blocked somebody else. Nice. So yeah, they bodied up everybody in that game, and I just liked seeing that. I loved it, and I feel like the Seahawks can do that, and they got a better quarterback. Russell Wilson's a better quarterback than Garoppolo. So
yeah,
was just,
I don't think there's any debate.
Yeah,
that.
It was encouraging to me, I guess. You know, you look at the other side and go look at Mahomes. Yeah, I mean, that guy's probably a little bit more arm talent than Russ, and he's got kind of the same playmaking ability. But, you know, if you have that run game and that philosophy to go along with it, then it certainly helps out Russ, which he didn't get help at the end because their running game just disappeared to injuries.
Isn't it amazing you've had 3 games in the postseason where the quarterback threw for less than 100 yards and they all resulted in a win?
It's modern football.
And again, we'll get to it. It's just remarkable. And in the early game, Tannehill did not have to throw for 100. He had to throw for more. It didn't work out. They got hammered pretty good. The score doesn't really indicate how one side of this game felt. 35-24, the final in that one. And Patrick, they don't even have a running game. They're the opposite of the 49ers. They don't have a running game to speak of. LeSean McCoy wasn't playing. I mean, their leading rusher was Patrick Mahomes with 53 yards, yet they're dominating too. So you're seeing two polar opposite ways that teams are dominating. One game, the guy throws the ball 8 total times, complete 6 passes. They crush the opposition. This one, their leading rusher is their quarterback with 53 yards, and they put on an offensive show and beat him by 11.
And what did he throw, 35 times?
Yeah, like 23 that? Of 35, 294 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's going to make for an interesting Super Bowl. And again, I'm just surprised that the 49ers are underdogs. But the one thing you have to say is that, you know, you guys were talking about just before we went on who shut down Derrick Henry this year. If you look at, and the professor has pointed this out a number of times, the last 5 games of the year, because Kansas City's defense kind of picked up where it left off last year, where, you know, they were getting sacks and things like that, but they're not very good. Last 5, they've given up 10 points. So, you know, and then they've given up a number of points more than that in the playoffs against Houston and Tennessee, but still, yeah, that defense is much improved. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to stop that monster of a 49er running game. And it looks like Coleman, was that looked like a dislocated elbow?
Yeah, that was Coleman. Weird. At first it looked like I thought it was his shoulder, the way he wouldn't move. Yeah. I mean, to have to be carted off for an arm injury because you don't, that bouncing or just that movement hurts it. I had a dislocated shoulder where I could hardly take a step. It hurt so bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Where
yeah.
It was out, it didn't pop back in. So
my rule used to be any upper body injury, you can walk off the field.
That's the worst thing I've ever felt.
Yeah.
It was, and I thought maybe that was it because he was not moving at all. He wasn't taking a step. But yeah, it looked, I guess they said elbow.
Yeah, it looked like he put it down and it just kind of tweaked on him. So I don't know if he's out or what, but, you know, they still have Matt Breida. So, and to me, that just showed that, I mean, those guys have had different, there's been a different running back in a lot of those games with the 49ers that's the leading rusher. You know, it's been Coleman a few times. It's been Breida a few times. So it's just a testament to the fact that they got a great system going there. And I don't know if they have great offensive linemen, but, man, they're well coached.
Did you enjoy these games, though? Did you have fun watching, or were you kind of like, I just wanted something competitive. I wanted to be tense at the end. Just give me something close. I didn't truly care who won. I just give me something where I'm on the edge of my seat. And these, you're just kind of like, ugh.
I actually liked it. I like seeing just two different styles of football win ball games. I think it's good for football in general because football is such a copycat league. Like, whatever's hot right now, everyone's going to do it. So now you got about four or five teams in this league who are just committed to the run. And then you got everyone else who's going to throw the ball around. So to see the San Francisco 49ers come out and dominate like that, it wasn't, I guess, entertaining for most people, but it was fun to watch this execution. I'm an offensive guy. Mm-hmm. When the offense gets going, I don't care if you're throwing the ball 50 times or you're running it 10 to 15 times or however, whatever you're doing. If you're executing at a high level, it's like a work of art to me. Everything's moving all together. Guys are getting to the right spots, and you're making your job easier on your quarterback. Jimmy, like you say, he threw the ball 8 times. You did not force Jimmy to win this ball game, and I think that's what the 49ers have done a great job of doing all year. On the other side, I enjoy seeing the Chiefs just figure it out. You know, they get down 10, 17 points, and again, they come back. Last week, they were down 24 points against the Texans and come back, and they just find a way to figure it out. And it's fun to see a young Patrick Mahomes lead that team.
He's so good.
There was a clip on the sideline against the Texans. They're like, they're already counting us out. Let's do something special. And I'm getting goosebumps. I'm like, man, let's go do something special, man. I'll go play for
you're
you right
now. You're
ready
to go catch the ball
now. So it's just nice to see different styles of football beat teams up.
I like his froggy voice, too.
Yeah.
He's got kind of a weird little voice.
He does have a different tone to his voice. He's just – he seems, by all accounts, seems like a good guy. I don't know a ton about him on a personal level, but – I love watching the guy play. He seems like a good dude, A. B, he's incredibly talented. And you've got faith that when they are, I mean, he's proving it now this year, that, you know, if they're behind, sort of like Russ, you feel like, yeah, they're going to find a way.
Right.
You feel like he's going to find a way. He's got a cannon of an arm. He's mobile. He seems like he makes the right decisions as to when to run, when to throw. He's a fun guy to watch. I just really wish Tyreek Hill was not on the team so I could feel okay about rooting for him. Yeah.
Because that throw against Sammy Watkins?
Yeah.
Going to the right, Sammy's going to the left. It had to be like 45, 50 yards in the air,
yeah.
His arm talent's crazy.
Yeah, it is. He can throw it all over the place. And, you know, and I think Russ has that, too. I mean, look at some of the throws that he's made, you know, on the run. The one that stands out the most was against the Rams, the toe tap one. But, you know, he's just flying one way. And to put that thing on the money, I mean, my gosh. Yeah, it's incredible what he's able to do. So, yeah, I mean, look, there was a reason why, you know, Schneider and the Seahawks staff went down and looked at Patrick Mahomes a few years ago. I mean, that guy was as good of a prospect.
What if he were sitting behind Russell right now? I mean, we probably wouldn't know that he's this good because Russell never misses a moment. So we'd have no idea that this guy is what we're watching now, right? How weird would that be?
Yeah, it would be strange, man. I don't know what, you know, you never know what, if there's a guy like that, you know, look at, and I'm not saying Garoppolo's a world beater, but, you know, in their passing game, they were seventh as far as rating goes this last year. So, I mean, he was pretty good, but he sat there behind Brady for a few years. And, you know, you see these backup quarterbacks that once they are the man, then, you know, you see something come out in them. I don't know what would have happened there. I always felt that way about behind Hasselbeck. Who's the kid that was a punt returner? And it's driving me nuts. He went to Iowa State. And
Seneca Wallace?
Seneca Wallace. Yeah. I was like, man, that guy's just sitting there rotting behind Matt Hasselbeck because he's such a great player. And you never know if, like, sometimes it's about timing, you know, about when you get a chance to play or where you get drafted and what team you go to and whether or not that system, you know, fits what you do best.
All right, let's take two.
Take two. All right, starting with basketball, UW falls to 12-7 after a 64-61 loss to Oregon Saturday night, and Klay Thompson had his jersey retired in Pullman as Washington State beat Oregon State 89-76.
Yeah, bigger weekend for the Cougs there, Bump. Huskies Looked like they were in command. I thought they were going to pull off that win against Oregon, and then we'd all be talking about, well, Oregon was overrated. I mean, come on, they lose to the Cougs and the Huskies, blah. Give them credit. They battle back, overtime win, and it just feels like the Huskies are a one-man show.
Yeah, they're relying on Stewart, 25 points, 19 boards. The freshman's doing it all for them, and it seemed like as soon as Oregon went to that full-court press, UW was rattled. You know, I believe they only had about 12 points. I think 12 points after they went to the full-court press is what they had. They had 2 points in overtime. I think Oregon just stepped up their defense and just rattled these young guys. And you can't rely on a big man freshman at that to get it done for you. You got a freshman who's on the perimeter who can create for you. I feel like you have a chance, but it's tough to rely on a big man freshman to get it done for you.
Boy, he's good, though.
Yes, he is.
He is so good. Did you get a chance to watch much of it?
I watched Wazoo. I saw the highlights of the Washington game, but how about this Bonton kid? I mean, in Clay, I loved that the coach Kyle Smith was kind of referencing him in the game when they beat Oregon. Yeah, we got Clay coming in here this weekend, but this Bonton kid, 8 for 13 field goals, 14 for 14 from the line. I love that when you see a player, and they end up shooting 92% from the line. So, and those are huge points, but he ended up with 34. But how about the kid Pritchett from, or is it Pritchard?
Pritchard, I think.
Pritchard, from Oregon. Those that one launch from about half court, and then the other one to put him into overtime. I mean, that kid is confident.
Super confident. You see what he said after he made the 3 points?
What was it like, this is my state?
I think this is my state. Is he from Washington?
I guess.
He's from Oregon. He's a four-time high school player of the year down in Oregon, Westland High School.
Oh, I was disrespectful.
Oh, so now he's saying, I own Washington now.
Yes, respect.
I've got Oregon in the bag.
He's claiming the Great Northwest.
I just took Washington from you. This is my state.
Tell him he has to beat the Cougs first.
That's right. I just assumed he was from here because he was saying that. Yeah. I didn't know much about him, but he's a hell of a player.
You know, he talks as much, you know what, as Nassachobe.
NASA's talk smack?
Oh, my gosh.
NASA, when he competes?
Yes. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he won a couple of the round the world contests we had over at Dory's house yesterday, and you were there the year before.
Yeah.
He's talks a good game,
oh,
huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He goes hard.
Yeah. And then he takes an Uber home.
I heard a little breaking news just before the show. John Heyman reporting that Felix Hernandez signed a $1 million deal to compete as a non-roster invite in spring training with the Braves and will try to compete to be the fifth starter.
You rooting for him?
Yeah, to an extent. The only thing that would bother me would be if he came in a condition he never came physically.
That would bother me too.
That would really irk me as a Mariner fan. Like if he just, he committed himself to this offseason workout. He's never been in this kind of condition. Or if he was just really, really amenable to altering his game. Like, hey, whatever you guys want me to do, we worked with him in the bullpen. We changed his mechanics. We changed everything. Whereas he really fought that here. So those are the only two things that would really get under my skin. If they say, hey, he just did his thing, he's about the same condition he normally does, but he has success, then good for him. I will root for him.
Well, and that's the only thing I didn't like about him was I didn't feel like he made a big enough commitment to adjust to the latter part of his career and how he was going to pitch. But I'm always going to root for Felix. I love that guy. I think he's one of the best athletes in Seattle. And just my experience talking to him, out at the cantina. He stayed afterwards one time and showed us how he throws his circle change, and he's just a great dude, and I'll always be rooting for him. But did you say Atlanta's coming to town this year?
They are, yes. So if he makes that roster, there's a chance you could see him.
I think he's going to come in better shape, you know, because you got to get humble.
That's going to make
you got to get humble sometimes. But my story with him, man, he came to Monroe about a year ago for a tournament his son was in. And there's no hiding him. He wears his hat. He has that look. You know that's Felix Hernandez. And so many kids were coming up to him in the middle of the game, and he signed every autograph, took every picture, didn't have an attitude about it. I had to tell some of the kids, like, let him watch his son play.
Right.
But just a nice guy overall, so I'm always rooting for that guy too.
All right, there you go. There's Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore today. Coming up, there were a lot of compliments, a lot of bouquets being thrown at Kyle Shanahan for his innovative and modern offense last night. Dave Wyman is chomping at the bit. He cannot wait to tell you why that's all nonsense. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore today. A reminder that our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. Coming up at 4 o'clock, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program. But before that, let's get to this new, modern, unlike any other offense we've ever seen conversation the 49ers seem to have started. And, Dave, you've been just aching to talk about this because there is a ton of praise being heaped on Shanahan and that coaching staff for this new and innovative way that they are running their offense. And again, just looking at what they did, they ran it 42 times yesterday. They threw the ball 8 total times. Garoppolo completed 6 passes for 77 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, and they walloped the Green Bay Packers.
Right. Just killed them. And, you know, look, it was a bad matchup. I told those idiot fans in Green Bay that they were going to get their butts whooped. Like,
it's weird they didn't listen.
Like, okay, well, enjoy one more week of football. You're going to get smashed. But, you know, look, the thing I guess that surprised me the most was that coming off of those games, and really the formula for Russell has not been to throw more. And if that's what modern is, you know, and maybe they're talking about, I've heard Danny say, you know, maybe they should pass more on first down and everything. I think that they should run plays that they think will work. I don't know if that's one thing that Jim likes to say, which I think is funny, but it's also well put because look at, and I guess the best example from the other day was, and as we talked about, it was a 3rd and 8 play, and it's a brilliant call, really. And if that's being more modern, then, okay, you run a simple trap play because everybody, number one, was up on the line. And number two, it's 3rd and 8. Those guys had their ears pinned back, which is perfect for a trap play because you're trying to time it up and get those guys. The guy on the end, I think it was Preston Smith, they didn't even have to block him. He was so far upfield.
The Smith brothers were a non-factor in this game. That's all we heard about before the Seahawks matchup with them. But for those that don't know, explain a trap play.
Okay, so yeah, it's pretty simple. You block down on one side and then you pull a guard to kick the guy out on the back, on the front side. And so it just ended up creating this big lane. And it's a timing play where if you sniff it out, I remember Miami used to run this trap play. And if you're a linebacker and you step up so that tackle doesn't come down and ear hole you, you can make it for, you know, a 1 yard, but it's kind of a guess. And I did happen to, you know, it was because it was the formation that they ran inside the red zone and they had the same formation. And I just took a chance and I stepped up and just stuffed it because there was nobody to block me.
But you could have gotten burned.
Yeah. I mean, if you hesitate, you're going to get, you know, and you're not sure. Sometimes both tackles will come down and try to take you out. But they just had it perfectly timed. And I thought Garoppolo did a great job on this because it was kind of a lollipop snap. If you go back and look at that play, he kind of had to reach forward for it and then give it to Mostert really fast because it would have screwed up the timing of it. But because Smith, they didn't block him. Like I said, he came off the edge and he tried to reach in. He almost got Mostert. And if that had been slowed down any, then it would have been, you know, it would have been 4th and 12. So anyway, yeah, the way they ran that and how they called it. But that is a trap play is such a basic play. It's like student body right. You know, a sweep play where they toss it, get an eye formation, and, you know, everybody just blocks and you try to get, I mean, it's just an old fashioned play. And so that's what they ran on 3rd and 8, which I thought was, you got some stones.
You feel like if the Seahawks did that, it'd go for like a 2 yard loss.
Yeah.
It was just, we look at it and go, what were they thinking?
Yeah, why did you do that?
3rd and 8, and you're going to run the ball?
Right. Well, and then, you know, a really well executed trap play again was going back to that Philly game in week 12 where Rashad Penny ran for it. And if you go back and look at that play, like the timing on it is perfect. Yapati comes across and, you know, he's the sort of knockout guy that hits the linebacker right as Penny is going through the hole. And it's just a timing thing, but it's an old fashioned play. And so, yeah, it's just funny to me. And then they end up running the ball. And I was going to ask you, Michael, I had this experience in let's see, I think it was 7th grade football where the head coach, Jeff Kemp, he was the play caller. He left to go. He had some family engagement. And so I had to call the plays. and I called running plays, and it was fantastic. You don't have to worry about hardly anything. And it just, as a coach and a play caller, if you can run, and you just went on about how it wears the defense down and it has all these other effects, but if you're able to call those plays, you know, and run plays and have as many run plays as they did, it just, it's a dream for a play caller.
It is. It's a dream, and it's because it's safe. You know, not too many things can go wrong. If you can get the snap and hand it to your running back, and if you see your line getting a push, and you can guarantee 3 yards. I used to tell my team, I go, man, if whoever you believed in came down right now and said, hey, you're going to get 3.5 yards per carry tonight, I said, we run the ball almost every single time. I mean, it's just, and it wears the team out. It keeps the offense off the field. So when you're able to call plays and run the ball consistently, it takes a lot of pressure off you. And what I think people need – who needs a little more credit in this 49er offense and what they do are the guys upstairs. They're the guys with all the analytics. They're communicating with Shanahan and saying, hey, these guys are pressing us hard on third and long. They're doing this, they're doing that. They're giving Shanahan all this information. Granted, Shanahan is putting in the work. He's watched film all week. He has his data. But in-game adjustments, in-game decisions, a lot of it is predicated off what those guys upstairs are telling him as well. So the fact that he was stubborn enough to stay with it too, you know, it sometimes you run the ball 15, 20 times. Like, okay, we got to mix it up. We got to throw the ball around. We got to do something different. Then that gets you in trouble. Then you throw a pick or there's a turnover. And then your tempo's messed up. Shanahan was so disciplined in staying with the run, which really impressed me the most, because even I was like, all right, he's got to take a shot now. Yeah. He's got to take a shot now. But he never did.
Sounds like Brock Huard might agree with you to an extent. He was on with Danny and Gallant. Says the 49ers offense is more innovative, but it's not as much of a discrepancy as most think. All right, that didn't work. Do we have that cut back there? Didn't fire.
Well, it would be the same one I gave you. I can try to get this working. Give me a second.
All right.
I heard Brock talking about that yesterday when we were, you know, I think he hijacked my modernization.
Oh, did he?
No. Yeah. but, yeah, it was fun to watch. And, you know, just the way it happened, I agree with you on it's a lot about – and so somebody might argue, well, that's being modern is, you know – having
just executing the old
guys.
Yeah, they're just the old school way of playing or running a trap play or running any of their running plays, or are they putting a new spin on it? You're talking about how they move around. There's a lot of deception going on.
I mean, what they do pre-snap. I know I didn't play, Dave, you know better than me, back in your day. I don't know if they did a lot of pre-snap shifting and motions and stuff. When I think of kind of what the 49ers do, I think of kind of like a wing T offense, you know, with all the shifts and stuff pre-snap. But you're right. All they're doing, there isn't a run play that hasn't been ran. There's trap, there's power, there's zone, there's stretch. There's, you know, there's no one is coming into the game of football and being innovative as far as the run game. I think all the new stuff is in the pass game and the RPOs and stuff. So yeah. I think Shanahan just went back old school and said, I got the guys, the personnel to run this up, this deception type offense. I'm going to add a little sauce before the snap and move guys around and try to confuse these guys.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. You talked about the discipline there. I'm a big take a shot on second and one guy. And, you know, I just figure, hey, if it comes up third and one, you got a great running game. But I noticed that on second and one, second and two, they ran the ball a lot. Like, they stayed disciplined to what they really believe in. And, you know, don't be afraid to get a first down, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, but I would always be, you know, if I was a play caller, I think I would probably stray that way.
Yeah.
But you have to be disciplined. And that's kind of what you saw from them. So, yeah, I just didn't see anything modern about it. I saw something that was very old school. And to me, you know, Russell didn't have that. At the end of the year, he was 95% and 91% of the offense. And we've found over the years that that's not exactly a formula that works. Mm-hmm. For Russell, maybe it's okay with his numbers. But if you look at his win percentage, it's much better if he's throwing the ball less, 25 or less, he's got a much better win percentage.
All right, coming up, Darrell Revis picked a Twitter fight with Richard Sherman last night. Did he have a point? We'll talk about it next year with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, the professor John Clayton will be joining us on the program, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, there was a little Twitter battle last night. Dave, you wouldn't know. You're not on the tweeter.
Mm-mm.
But Richard Sherman and Darrell Revis got into it.
Oh, Sherman got into some kind of an argument, a petty argument?
Well, I think it looks like Revis may have started it.
Yeah, it does look like that.
He was taking pictures of his screen, a little still shot of Devontae Adams beating Sherman on that big play and saying, you know, fear of getting beat in man-to-man coverage, every snap, every play. The fact he doesn't travel as a cornerback is lame. Accept the challenge, spelled it wrong, at the best and shut Adams down the entire game. Do it for the game of football. Stop hiding a cover three zone, is what he was saying. And then Richard went back at him. I would go into this has-been, but I have a Super Bowl to prepare for. Enjoy the view from the couch. Your ninth year looked a lot different than this. And then there were a few more exchanged.
What's LMAO?
Laugh my backside off.
Oh, okay.
So they went back and forth a few more times, and Revis pulled the, I'm not being a hater. I'm just saying the guy doesn't play man. He's a zone corner, and that's something.
Oh, not being a hater. It's like some of the people that text in here. Like, do you read the stuff that you text?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to think really? I don't know who you are, other than 425-360.
Yeah.
And you think you can say something that's like sounds mean? Like, read it first.
Yeah, it's hard to interpret tone if you're being sarcastic unless you put the winky face on there or ha ha, just kidding or something. It's hard to interpret sarcasm. Sometimes there are people that are just that dumb.
Yeah.
You know? So
Darrell Revis, I mean, coming back like, oh no, I'm just. I mean, that's just
kind of. He was just saying, hey, I was just pointing out he's not a man to man guy. He's a zone.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't lie. I mean, Richard Sherman doesn't follow receivers. He's a cover three corner, but that doesn't mean that he's not one of the best corners to play the game.
Right.
That's just what he does. It's like asking a point guard to go play the block in basketball. That's not what he does. He's a point guard. He brings the ball up. So I get where he was going. He's trying to be an analyst, I feel like. You know, because I noticed, if this is correct, the first time Darrell Revis tweeted, he did not tag Richard Sherman on him. If he was about
the
drama,
the picture, right?
About that life, he would have tagged him there. But he didn't. I think he was trying to be an analyst and let the people know what he was doing. What got him in trouble is the word lame. You put lame in there, it changes the whole thing.
I think you're right. Lame.
That can't be good. Not in any way. You know, I thought the first play of the game, if they showed him lined up out there on Devontae Adams, if they had ran a go route, he'd have got burned. Yeah, yeah. I mean, because he put a little move on it, and it ended up being a running play, but... Yeah, look, that's just not who Sherm is, and I'll defend him because I think he's a great – I like bringing up that I think he's the best tackling corner in NFL history because people just freak out, and I'm like, come on, man. It's not that big of a
distinction.
A stretch.
Most don't tackle that well.
Right.
So anybody who decides to, you know, get their nose in there and really commit to it, right, stand out.
Well, and then the other thing is he'll be able to play 2-3 years past, which I think he has lost his step. He can't run as well anymore, but he's so smart.
Yeah.
He is such a smart player that, you know, he's going to be able to. So who cares? I mean, if at the end of the day, now, did he lead the entire NFL in interceptions?
No.
I thought he said something about that.
Maybe I think since he's been in the league or
something. Kid in New England had more than he did, I'm pretty sure. But
Stephon Gilmore, you're talking
Gilmore,
about?
Yeah.
I think King had more of them, too. Cornerback from Green Bay.
Yeah, I don't think he was close in that category. Revis said, all y'all think I'm throwing shade. I'm not. Just stating the man is not a pound-for-pound, man-to-man corner. If you know the game of football, he plays in a cover three scheme. He does not travel, but traveling with a receiver is not for every DB. It's a few on the corner list who can.
Throwing shade. He is throwing shade.
So there's a sense of pride of being that guy that, and we questioned it, right? When we were talking about Trey Flowers having problems, why didn't Shaq follow Devontae Adams when, you know, Adams was eating Trey Flowers' lunch, so why wouldn't he? I think there is a different level of respect for that guy that commits to shutting down, all right, Julio Jones, that's my guy.
Yeah.
Or Devontae Adams, I got him.
Well, it's not even the corner's decision. It's the staff's decision.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Well, sure. That's what I said. I was like, I think he should play the defense that the coach wants him to play.
Exactly.
That would be – you can't lose that way.
Here's Rondé Barber was on with Colin Cowherd, asked if Revis is overrated, and here's his response.
No, he's that good.
He is?
Yeah. It's, and it's the little things that he does that you really can't – characterize in a broadcast. You know, the movement skills. You know, he's never really out of position. His hand placement, the little stuff that wins for a corner, he does better than anybody.
And here's Barber comparing Sherman and Revis.
Really, I mean, you like fruit. They are apple and oranges. They don't do the same thing. You know, they're both great. I think Sherman's ball skills are probably the best in football for a defensive
when
back.
When the ball's in the air.
Oh, my goodness. He attacks it. He's long. He's got, you know, great vision and hands. He's just a different player than Darrell Revis. So to compare him is almost, it's unfair to both of them. They're both great, but in my mind, different ways.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's like when people, I tweeted this last week. It's like when people say he's a system quarterback. Every quarterback is a system quarterback. There's a system that works for that quarterback. For Richard Sherman, this is the defense that worked for him that he plays in. Revis has his own system or his own defense. So, yeah, I'm with Rondé all day. Apples, oranges, whatever you said.
Yeah, and that's coaching, right? I mean, as a coach, that's your duty to put guys in the best light that you possibly can.
That's because Sherman can't be a man-to-man guy, so they put him in the cover three scheme.
Yeah.
Just kidding. I'm just throwing gas on the fire. Maybe he could be a man-to-man guy. Maybe they just feel like, hey, considering everybody else that's on, it's not just about Sherm, right? You're running the system for your group, not for him.
Yeah, and then with Sherm, he runs that cover three. He's long. It allows him to play long. It allows him to see man and football. You know, you want to use his ball skills. You want to use his length. You want to use his smarts. How do you do that? You drop him in his zone, allow him to see the field and make plays.
He's simple enough.
Yeah,
and he should be his coach.
Well, and I heard somebody this morning, and I can't remember who was talking about it, but they basically said, listen, Revis would shut down that guy, whoever he was following that day. Sherm shuts down the side of the field. Mm-hmm. So they both have their impact, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Sherm's really good. Whether we love him or hate him now, whether he's a different guy than he was when he was here, whatever your feelings are about Sherm, he's still finding a way to be really effective, even having perhaps lost a step, coming off the Achilles injury. He is older. But he's, in my opinion, he still intimidates the opposing quarterback to a certain extent. You see a reluctance to throw to his side.
Yeah. Well, and in 10 years, he's going to not be such a donkey. Because most guys, because I can't say what I really want to say, but most guys, and I don't know if you remember this, Michael, I had much more of an edge to me when I was a player. Because you kind of had to.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit. And, you know, and I met guys, Brian Habib, who was a guard for the Huskies. I played with him in Denver. And, man, that guy, he was wound tight. You see him now. He is the nicest. He's like a different person. He was always a good person. But, yeah, just as an example, I think Sherm's going to come back in 10 years and everybody's going to love him. Yeah.
He'll be soft and cuddly. And
I don't know about cuddly.
All right. Coming up, we'll get the professor's thoughts on yesterday's game in the Super Bowl matchup. He joins us next. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.